Borna shook his scarred head. He felt awkward. Kalzean had ordered him firmly not to tell Moloch about the prisoner, and he found it extremely uncomfortable keeping secrets from Moloch. There were very few things in the Forsaken Galaxy that Lucius Vorna was afraid of, but Zygmunt Moloch made the cut.
"He'll be back, I'm sure," Vorna said. "He's probably checking something."
Layla Slade leant over Drouet's cogitator post in the security control center, watching the multiple images drifting and switching on the hololithic projection.
"That's definitely Thonius," she said.
"Bioprints confirms," Drouet said.
"Pinpoint, please."
Drouet adjusted some of the cogitator's controls.
"West flank of the cliffs, between markers 36 and 37, he replied. "Thus about 60 meters shy of the summit. I've got him painted by 3 motion and picked scanners. Positive ID. If he continues unchecked, he'll make West Low Terrace in under 10 minutes. I thought he was supposed to be a principal agent, ma'am."
"Why do you say that?"
Drouet shrugged.
"He's not exactly moving with any skill or subtlety. It seems to me he's taking all his effort just to climb the cliff. Doesn't he realize we've got him cold?"
Layla leaned in closer.
"Have we got a gun on him yet?"
"Sensory 18 will acquire him in about 3 minutes. He must know we can see him, surely. He must realize Elmingard is locked down tight with scanners and trips."
"Apparently not," Slade replied. "I think our friend Thonius has underestimated our capabilities. Load Sentry 18, track and fix, and fire on my command."
"Yes, ma'am," said Drouet.
"Ma'am,"
Sabo called from his machine. She crossed to him.
"I've found another. Confirmed sensor hit. Eastern side. A little closer than target one."
"Show me."
"He's in deep shadow and partially concealed. I'll punch up night scoping and enhance."
An image, just a portion of a profile boosted by low-light enhanciles, flickered onto the lith projection.
"Know him?"
asked Sabo.
"No, I..."
Slade paused.
"Shit! That's Balak! Frigate! He's supposed to be dead! Moloch killed him on Tancred!"
"Not with any lasting success, it would appear," said Sabo.
"Is he ranged?"
Slade asked.
"He will be in 25 seconds at current rate of advance."
"Get me!"
she began. Her link beeped.
"Slade,"
she answered, pulling the device out of her pocket.
"Lay, it's me."
Kalzean's voice floated back. There was a strange, muffled yelping sound coming through behind him.
"What's going on?" Slade asked. "I can hear."
"Ignore the background fuss," Kalzean replied. "The lovely Kara just had an epiphany, and she's getting over it. Lay, tell me quickly, have you confirmed Thonius?"
"Biotrace and visual," she said. "Definitive match. Palpable. Get this. We've also got Balak coming up for a visit."
"Balak? Really?"
"I'd wager my reputation, sir."
"Listen to me, Layla, and listen carefully. I want them taken alive, especially Thonius."
"What?"
"I'm deadly serious, Lay. Do this for me, and do it discreetly. Knock your systems back to passive before they realize they're being targeted."
"Off you. That's madness. The sentry guns are seconds away from acquiring them both. I can hose them off the rocks."
"No! I want Thonius brought in alive, you understand me? Alive. Do it personally if you have to. Get him into custody, immediately and quietly. Make sure Zygmunt doesn't know anything about it."
"This has a bad feel to me," she warned.
"Layla, I love you, but this is one of those times when you act like a good girl and do exactly what I frigging well tell you. Go passive, shut the system back, get Thonius alive. Balak too, the silly little fool. But I don't care so much if you have to top him. Are we clear?"
Layla Slade breathed tightly.
"Totally, sir,"
she said. She clicked off her link and put it away.
"Cut to passive running," she told Drouet and Sabo. "Turn off the sentries."
They looked at her.
"Mom, are you sure?" asked Sabo.
"We've got Throne agents crawling up the rock face,"
Drouet added.
"I know what I've been told,"
snapped Slade, pulling her handgun out and arming it.
"Do as I say."
Eyebrows raised, the two security experts obliged, throwing a series of switches that set the Elmingard defenses to passive. The powerful sentry gun servitors went to dormant status.
"Now what?"
asked Sabo.
"Get 2 guns up here to join me. I'm going to greet Master Thonius. Drouet, can you handle Balak when he shows his face?"
Drouet got to his feet and checked his las pistol.
"Certainly," he said. "Alive?"
"If possible," she said.
Chapter 6 The rain was in his face, and the whole world was black. Shuddering with cold and effort, Carl Thonius clambered a few meters more up the steep rock track. It was a sheer climb in places where the path fell away, nothing like the simple ascent he had envisioned. The laughing, buzzing thing in his soul had lied about that. He hauled himself up over an overhang, straining with arms alone, his legs dangling. The darkness yawned below him. If his numb fingers let go, it would be a long, final drop. Overhead, the breaking storm boomed, the rock wet. He pulled himself up onto the overhang and lay there for a moment, panting. Rain fell on his face. He'd lost touch with the others. At the base of the crag, they'd split up, deciding to optimize their chances. Thonius had gone up the western path, he'd identified. Balak had taken the east face. Pleiton and Belknap had chosen to work their way up the ravine behind the Elmingard Plateau to see if they could find a way up from the north. Thonius resumed his climb. Conditions were awful and getting worse, inside and out. The storm was closing in. His own storm was closing in. Fire and buzzing laughter licked at his mind. He tried to force it back, but it sizzled at his thoughts and burned back his memories. Pain shot through him, making him gag and lose his grip. Nausea yawned. He could hear a voice inside him sniggering at his puny, mortal efforts to survive and stay human. Buzzing. Buzzing. His scanner pad bipped, and he pulled it out to check it. The pad showed him the contact prints of several scanner pods built into the rocky face above. They read as passive. That was good. Lucky, in fact. He'd expected serious electronic countermeasures, an active system, probing and stabbing at them as they came up, but a passive system was easy to beat. Perhaps Moloch was getting slack in his old age. No one was expecting them. Thonius drew himself up and clambered on. The rain had begun in earnest, driving the partygoers indoors. Out onto the lower north terrace, the tapers sputtered and fizzled as the downpour extinguished them. Siskin's first mate, Ornales, closed and bolted the double doors once they were inside. Siskind was ordering more drinks, and there was laughter in the room. Off in one corner, Moloch had been drawn into deep conversation with two of Kalzean's most learned savants. They were ancient, robed individuals, their bald heads like heavy ivory balls. Vorna stayed outside the activity, watching. He had never been one for hell-raising and drink, unless it was with his own kind, and the members of his team that he'd managed to pull out of the Utokri mess were all still aboard Siskin's ship. These people were not his type. Intellectuals. Savants. Kalzean's brand of people. Even the hard-bodied men in blue wool suits with silver buttons who acted as security were not Vorna's sort. They were good, Vorna acknowledged, but they were young. Guard vets, mostly. A few high-end underworld recruits. Well-drilled and well-made. None of them had the grizzled edge of experience that a bounty life provided. They regarded him with curiosity, but he knew they thought he was low-life scum. Scum barely covered what Lucius Vorna thought of them. The only person around that he had the vaguest sense of connection with was Kalzean's minder, Slade. He liked her. She hadn't had the same career path as him, but she was good, professional, and dedicated. He'd seen her work. She was a kindred spirit, or as close to a kindred spirit as he was likely to find in this blasted house at the end of the world. He left Siskin's party quietly and slipped out into the drafty corridor. He'd been privately scanning the Voxnet for the past few minutes, and he'd heard some tantalizing stuff on the back and forth. Something was up. Gaul Balak hauled himself up over the lip wall of one of the eastern terraces. The rain was sheeting down, like a white curtain. He was soaked and chilled to the bone. His long white hair hung lank and wet, and water streamed down his face. The place was empty and unlit. He could smell wet stone and wet earth, and hear nothing but the hiss of the rain. He rose and glanced around. His pad showed no sign of active sensor noise. Parched rose bushes nearby fluttered and shook in the night's wind and rain. He looked up. Several levels above him, in the inner knot of the ancient house, lights glowed behind shuttered windows. He stepped forwards across flagstones so worn and uneven that rainwater had collected in deep, angular puddles. Another step, Another. It looked like there was a staircase ahead, a flight of steps cut in the terrace side, which might afford him access to the next level of the haphazard palace.
"I suggest you stop there," said Drouet,
stepping out of the rain and the shadows behind him, a las pistol raised and aimed. Balak froze and slowly, resignedly, raised his hands.
"Throne, you're good. I didn't even hear you," he said.
Drouet came closer.
"Underground. Down on the ground. Face down," he instructed sharply. "Hands where I can see them."
"Hands?"
asked Balak, bitterly.
"Get down."
Balak lay down on his face, smelling the wet rock close up. Rainwater streaked off him.
"I have to see Moloch," Balak said. "Shut up." "It's a matter of the most pleasant fraternal confidence," Balak tried.
It stood to reason that Moloch might employ other cognitae.
"Whatever you say," said Drouet.
Clearly he was not of the Brotherhood.
"Tell him that, then," said Balak. "Use those exact words, and he'll—"
"Shut up," Drouet spat, standing over him. He bent down and began to frisk Balak. The interrogator felt the muzzle of the las pistol poke at the back of his head.
"One move from you I don't like," Drouet told him. "You'll be scraping your brains up with a trowel." "You paint a vivid picture," Balak grunted.
Unamused, Drouet pushed harder with the gun, and Balak's face banged into the flags, chipping one of his teeth. The lip cut Belknap had given him began to bleed again. Drouet found Balak's weapon, tugged it out, and tossed it away into the rain and darkness over the wall.
"Roll over," Drouet instructed.
Balak obeyed. Flat on his back, he stared up into the sheeting downpour at the man standing over him. Balak blinked the rain away.
"Get me inside," he said. "Take me to whoever is in charge." "Shut the frig up," said Drouet,
aiming his weapon and taking out his link. The one-shot las was a small device, just a tube, and Balak had fitted it to the stump of his wrist, just behind the cuff. It was so small that a cursory pat-down wouldn't find it. He swung his arm up, popped the tube forwards on its spring catch with a flex of his forearm, and fired the shot. Its bark was lost in a thump of thunder. Drouet smacked backwards. The shot had punched in under his chin and gone up through his skull. The entry wound made a neat, fleeting black hole that closed again into a tiny blemish as tissue shock rippled across the flesh of his throat. The back of his head came off in a spray of blood and tissue. He fell back, slumping against the terrace wall and almost pitching off. Then he fell down heavily. Thick, acrid smoke billowed up from the exit wound in the back of his cranium. What remained of his ruptured brain was still cooking and burning. His limp legs began to spasm and thump. Balak got up. He took hold of Drouet, dragged the twitching corpse upright, and then pushed it over the wall into the night. Drouet plummeted away into the blackness below. Balak retrieved Drouet's pistol and snapped the one shot back into its holder. "I'll recharge it later," he thought, as he turned. A steel fist ploughed him down. It came out of nowhere and piled into the side of his face, smashing most of his teeth. Balak went over so violently that he almost inverted, his legs flying up. He crunched onto the puddled flagstones. Gasping, blood pouring from his mouth, he reached out to grab his fallen weapon. The moment his fingers took hold of it, a pearl-armored boot stamped on it and crushed it to pieces. The las pistol cracked and fractured, its power cell shorting wildly as it met the rain. All the bones in Balak's remaining hand broke and mashed. Balak screamed in agony, aspirating blood out into the drenching downpour.
"Balak,"
said Lucius Vorna,
"we meet again."
"No!"
Balak wailed, as Vorna ground his boot down harder to emphasize the point.
"Guess what?"
asked Vorna, drawing his bolter.
"Hmm? End of story."
Carl Thonius clambered over the west wall and dropped 2 meters onto the flagged yard. The rain was extreme, affording zero visibility. Lightning flashed, brighter than even lightning ought to be. A second later, thunder smashed like a demon's drum.
"Beating for me. Beating for me."
He pulled out his weapon. It was going to be a tight call, but he was here. This was where it would play out. Moloch would save him. Or Moloch would... Carl blinked. His gun was no longer in his hand. It had been kicked out of his grip. A woman came at him through the streaming rain. He sidestepped, and they circled one another.
"Hello," she said, brightly. "You're Carl, right? Carl Thonius?"
Who do I have the pleasure of addressing? He replied, courteous to the end.
My name is Layla Slade. I'd like you to come with me, Carl, quietly.
Oh, dear, he said. I might not be able to do that.
She shrugged and wheeled immediately into a spin kick that almost took his head off. No wonder his gun had gone flying. Thonius ducked the kick and circled again. The woman, Slade, kicked out twice in a rotating 1-2, her powerful legs punching like pistons, but he evaded both strikes.
Come on, Carl, she taunted. I thought you were good.
I am, he answered.
He threw a sidekick feint at her, followed by a lateral jab. She backstepped out of the former, reading the feint for what it was, and blocked the latter, but he had momentum, and he drove a rapid sequence of killing punches at her. She blocked them all with stinging claps of skin on skin, and managed to wrong-foot him. Pirouetting off the ground, she kicked out a response and caught him square in the chest. His breath left him in a bark, and he staggered backwards. Then he dropped into a quick defensive stance, trying to recover. His chest hurt. He lunged forwards, low and fast, risking a sternum punch. She met the punch with a high deflecting kick, and countered with a blade fist, which he barely slapped aside. He switched right with another feint, and drove at her throat with a needle fist, but she was too quick for him to catch.
I think I love you, Layla Slade, he panted.
They all say that, she retorted.
They were circling again.
I think you should know something, Thonius added.
What might that be?
Knocking me insensible is probably the last thing you want to do.
Why?
Because if I'm unconscious, I won't be able to concentrate any more.
I'll take my chances, she said.
They leapt at each other, simultaneously, their attacks clashing and overlapping. There was a meaty crack of flesh and bone as one was successful. Slade landed squarely. Thonius fell hard. His body rolled limply across the rain-slick flagstones. Breathing hard, Slade opened her link.
Got him,
she said, over the hissing rain. Overhead, the thunder roared, as if in approval. Chapter 7 Calzean left the alcove and hurried out into the drafty gloom of the corridor.
This way,
he hissed as Slade and Vorna approached. Vorna had Balak's body slung over his wide shoulder plate. Slade was dragging Thonius.
Fine work, my friends, Calzean said. Did anybody see you?
Slade shook her head.
Your man Drua is dead, Vorna grumbled. Balak shot him. Lucky for you, I was close by.
Where shall we put them? Slade asked.
We can lock Balak up in the underpantry, Calzean said. First we make Thonius secure. Bring him this way.
What's so important about Thonius? Slade asked.
Never mind. Why are we hiding this from Moloch?
Vorna growled.
Never mind that either. Come on.
They moved away down the stone corridor until they were out of sight. The rain beat down, and drools of rainwater seeped into the lower structures of Elmingard. Maud Plighton, a shotgun in her hands, rolled out of hiding as soon as it was quiet. She ran to the alcove's door and tried the handle. It was locked. Muttering an oath, she knelt down and pulled out her picklock bundle. She worked the lock, sweating, jumping at every sound and every boom of thunder.
Come on, she spat. Oh, come the frig on!
The door swung open. Raising her weapon, she crept inside, instantly repelled by the skeletal horrors and jarred monstrosities on display in the gloom around her. A woman in a curious head brace sat chained to a wooden chair at the center of the room, her head bowed.
Kara?
Kara Swall looked up, drunkenly, at the sound of Plighton's voice. Her eyes were blinkered by the colored lenses of the Kainbrach device.
Who?
She sighed. Plighton moved towards her and began to unfasten the chains.
It's all right, Kara. It's me, Maud. I'll get you out of this.
Maud. Maud, I saw.
Kara murmured.
It's all right,
Plighton assured her, fighting with the shackles.
Oh, Thrawn,
said Kara more clearly, stiffening in her seat.
Kara, it's all right. Just let me.
I saw. I remembered.
He's here. He's here. He's here. Kara, what are you saying to me?
Kara shuddered, and then projectile vomited violently.
Kara!
Plighton pulled her loose and let the chains fall away with a clatter. She dragged the strange lensed device off Kara's head.
He's here, Maud. Slight's here.
Kara gurgled. Hauling her upright, Maud Plighton felt the hairs on her neck rise.
No, he's not, Kara. We're all right. Stop saying that.
He's here.
Elmingard's vast stone kitchen smelled of peppers, goose fat, and grease. Their work over for the night, the cooks had gone, and a few scullery boys had been left clearing the marble counters and mopping the floor. Pots were being scrubbed, and the ovens were being banked down. Two youngsters, on menial dishwashing duties, began to lark around beside their enamel sinks, throwing soap suds and bottle brushes at one another. A senior domestic in a floor-length apron marched in front of the larders and bellowed at the pair. He took them both by the earlobes and dragged them out of the kitchen, ignoring their squeals of protest. The other scullery boys quietly stopped their chores and crept over to the doorway to eavesdrop and giggle at the dressing down the pot washers were receiving outside. Belknap seized his chance. He slipped down the length of the old kitchen, hugging the shadows and the wall, his rifle clutched to his chest. Old skills, never forgotten. Hug the cover, stay low. His pulse raced. If any of the youngsters turned away from the door, they would see him and raise the alarm. But he couldn't stay hidden. He had to find Kara. There was nothing more important in the entire galaxy. A small part of him stepped back and scoffed at his antics. Belknap had been taking risks all his adult life. 6 years in the Guard, 9 as community Medicaid, and then the rest as a backstreet, unlicensed doctor. The risks he'd taken had always been about the general good, about service. They had always been measured and rational. This was different. This was stalking into a hornet's nest of first-degree sociopaths and heretics, and all for the love of a woman he barely knew, a woman who, in all likelihood, had been dead for over a week. This was not like him, not at all. He was out of his depth. He was no principal agent like Thonius, Balak, or Kiss, or even, throne rest him, Harlan Nail. This was not the life he had chosen, nor been recruited for. He was just an ex-soldier who knew his way around a rifle, and had a little training in stealth work and the use of cover. All he really had was his faith and his passion. He hoped they would be enough. The scullery boys broke from the doorway and flocked back to their chores as the senior domestic returned, shouting. Belknap had just reached the exit at the far end. He slid into other shadows, breathed out, and headed up a dingy staircase into the rambling house. Halfway up the stairs, he ducked down as he heard a sound from outside, louder than the din of the storm. What was that? Thrusters?
I'd really like to know what's going on, said Zygmunt Moloch, stepping into the cold, damp underpantry.
He had come out of nowhere. Kalzean glanced around, saw him, and quietly cursed. He put on a busy smile and strode towards Moloch.
Zig, my friend, you don't need to bother yourself with this.
He put a hand gently on Moloch's arm to steer him out of the room, but Moloch shook it off.
I don't like the idea that you're hiding things from me, Orfeo. Who is that?
Moloch pushed past Kalzean and advanced into the dank underpantry. Vorna and Slade reluctantly stood back from their captive. Kalzean knew he had to handle Moloch with more care than ever before. He shrugged, changing his approach.
All right, Zig, you got me. It's Balak. It was supposed to be a surprise.
Balak?
Moloch asked. He peered at the man Slade and Vorna had been chaining to a stone block by the pantry's back wall.
Balak? The interrogator. It was going to be my gift to you,
Kalzean said. Moloch ignored the facilitator. He knelt down beside Balak, peering at him.
I was quite sure I'd killed you, he said.
Behind him, Kalzean shot urgent looks at Vorna and Slade. Slade put her hand on the grip of her holstered weapon. Vorna drew his bolt pistol quietly. Moloch didn't seem to notice. He stimulated a pressure point in Balak's neck with the tip of his finger. Balak woke up with a splutter. He swung his head around and blinked as his eyes focused. Blood seeped out between his shattered teeth.
Moloch? Indeed, said Moloch. What are you doing here, Balak? What possible purpose could have brought you to me?
I wanted,
Balak murmured, his words slurred and malformed by his broken mouth.
I wanted.
What did you want?
Asked Moloch.
Revenge, you bastard. I wanted revenge. You left me to die. We were brothers. Cognite. I served you in fraternal confidence, and you betrayed me.
Moloch rose to his feet and looked down at Balak.
You are a poor excuse for a Cognite. Diluted fifth or sixth generation, an affront to our tradition. You were an instrument, and I used you without compunction. I owed you nothing.
Balak groaned and thrust at Moloch, but the chains were too tight.
You came all this way to kill me?
Moloch asked. He looked around at Kul'zean.
It rather begs the question how the hell he found me. Zygmunt, we'll work that out in due course, said Kul'zean carefully. For now, no,
snapped Moloch.
I want to know what's going on, Kul'zean, right now.
Vorna moved forwards rapidly. Moloch made a flicking gesture with his right hand, and Vorna's bolt pistol flew out of his grasp. Moloch caught it, turned, and aimed it at Balak's head.
Moloch, it's a matter of the most pleasant fraternal confidence,
Balak slurred.
Moloch! Shut up,
said Moloch, and pulled the trigger. Balak's head exploded. Slade leapt back, spattered with blood. Even Vorna flinched.
Zygmunt,
Kul'zean growled. Moloch muttered some dark prayer and turned back to face them. He calmly handed the weapon back to Vorna.
What else are you hiding from me, Orfeo?
Nothing,
Kul'zean declared.
Let me put it another way,
said Moloch.
How did Balak find me? Why is it I hear thrusters?
I don't,
Kul'zean began. Slade and Vorna pulled out their links simultaneously. Both of them had started chiming.
Incoming vehicle,
said Slade to Kul'zean.
You see,
said Moloch,
I think it's time you stopped lying to me, Orfeo, and started telling me plainly what in the name of the Undying Eight is going on here.
Chapter 8. The cutter skimmed in low and fast out of the night towards the high perch Elmingard. The sensor web of Kul'zean's fastness had been set, by the Master's own recent command, to passive, but even that did not explain the way the cutter had come into airspace proximity without any prior detection. There were three other factors in play. The first was the way the cutter was being flown, ultra-fast and ultra-low, what Navy pilots called crust-kissing. The flight path had hugged the terrain all the way from the Saar borders. In places, the craft's downwash had parted treetops like a comb, or whipped up corn stooks from the harvested fields. The method of flying kept the craft's profile low and tough to paint. It also required a very experienced and dynamic style of piloting. The second factor was the way the small craft was obscured. A shield or veil had been employed, its mechanism and type unidentifiable to Szabo and the other professional experts in Elmingard's security control center. The cutter was suddenly just there. They heard its thrusters before they saw it on their scopes. The third factor was the night. The storm was a filthy, howling monster, worse than any they'd known. It straddled the mountaintops like a drunken ogre, roaring at the heavens. The storm's savage electrical pattern flared and sparked and wallowed, creating blinks, false artifacts, phantoms and idiot washes on the instrumentation. It caused two of the cogitators to short out. Bizarre whines and squeals emerged from the speakers, causing Eldrick, the duty man on station with Szabo, to tear off his headset. This isn't natural, Eldrick complained. Szabo was slow replying. He was staring at his own screen, where the fading after-image of the last lightning ghost had shown an uncanny resemblance to a human skull. What? He asked, distractedly.
I said this isn't natural. The storm, said Eldrick. No, I don't think it is, said Szabo.
He shook himself.
Concentrate on the damn contact. Pull it up for me, sharp.
On it, said Eldrick. Szabo lifted his handset and pressed the master channel. Kul'zean answered.
Sir, said Szabo, we have an airborne contact, 2 kilometers out, coming in strong. No marker, no registration, no handshake codes.
I can hear it already, replied Kul'zean's voice. It must be really moving.
It is, as I said, sir. I'm about to light the house defenses and switch to active, with your permission.
Down in the clammy gloom of the under-pantry, the ghastly stink of Balak's detonated skull still clinging to the air, Kul'zean glanced at Moloch and then nodded.
Light them up, Mr. Szabo. Activate all perimeter and surface-to-air systems. Stand ready to deny them and annihilate them.
Hail them first,
Moloch said.
What?
Asked Kalzean.
Hail them. Hail them,
Moloch demanded.
Zygmunt, they are coming in unauthorized. No codes. They are not ours.
They want to be here.
Zig, zig, zig. It could be an Inquisition raid.
Moloch laughed. It was a disconcerting sound, because he didn't do it very often.
Orfeo, if the Inquisition had found us, they'd have called in Battlefleet Scarus and wiped us off the map already. Hail them! No, Zygmunt, this...
Moloch demonstrated his right arm flick again, and the link sailed out of Kalzean's manicured hand. Kalzean cursed. Moloch caught the device neatly and raised it to his ear.
Zabo, hail the contact.
There was a long silence.
Zabo!
I'm sorry, sir. I only take orders from Master Kalzean,
Zabo's voice said. Moloch sighed and looked back at Kalzean. He handed the link back to him.
I am ever impressed by the quality of the people you employ, Orfeo.
Kalzean took the link back.
Mr. Zabo, hail the contact.
Yes, sir.
Kalzean lowered the link. He glanced at Slade and Vorna.
Leigh, I'd like you up in the center to take charge.
Yes, sir,
Slade said, hurrying out.
Lucius, Kalzean said, you'd be useful up on the landing if this goes ass up.
Vorna nodded and strode away. Kalzean looked over at Moloch.
We should go up and see what this is.
Moloch nodded.
We should. Just to be clear, Orfeo, we're not done, you and me.
I know.
We're not done. I know.
Moloch placed a hand on Kalzean's arm and gently prevented him from leaving the underpantry.
What I mean, Orfeo, is that there's a very real possibility that we are about to experience a parting of the ways, and you do not, believe me, want that to happen.
Kalzean looked down and very deliberately took hold of Moloch's hand and removed it from his sleeve.
Zig, don't threaten me. I am the last person you should ever threaten.
Moloch smiled. It was the expression a hyena might wear as it salivated over some newly felled prey.
Orfeo, there's no one anywhere I would ever be afraid of threatening. Understand that, and our relationship might last a little longer.
Layla Slade entered Elmingard's security control center in time to hear Zabo say,
Approaching vehicle! Approaching vehicle! Respond and identify yourself! This is private airspace! Identify yourself or suffer the consequences of trespass!
Static fuzzled back.
Approaching vehicle! Approaching vehicle!
Zabo began again. Slade took his vox mic away from him.
Approaching vehicle, she said sternly. This is Elmingard. Speak now, or we'll hammer you out of the sky with the Emperor's own righteous fury. Respond!
Static.
Are the systems active?
Slade asked the duty men.
Sentries alive. Missiles armed and ranged,
Eldrick replied quickly, clicking brass switches on his desk.
Approaching vehicle,
Slade began again. She didn't get a further word out. The approaching vehicle interrupted her by answering.
It was not a vox squirt, nor a pict-enabled transmission. It was a psi blurt.
Elmingard, hold your fire. You do not want to destroy me, because I am not your enemy. Not this time.
Heading up through the Byzantine stairwells of Elmingard, Kalzean and Moloch stopped in their tracks.
Ow!
Said Kalzean.
Did you feel that?
Yes,
said Moloch.
It's him.
Who?
Who the hell do you think? Who else knows us this well? Who else is so powerful a sender?
Ravener?
Moloch nodded.
It's Gideon, he said.
Ravener's alive?
Moloch looked at him in disdain.
Of course he is. Did you ever doubt it? Oh, grow up, Orfeo.
It was dark and cold and wet out in the raw base of the astronomer's broken tower. The wind shrieked in through the gappy stones, and there was no shelter from the rain. Carl Thonius moaned, pulling at the wrist chain Layla Slade had shackled him with. The chain was anchored to the heaviest tumbled block in the heart of the tower. He had heard the voice. In his head, he had heard the voice, despite the buzzing and the chuckling. Gideon's voice. Gideon was alive. Thonius felt a sudden, soaring sense of hope. There was regret and shame, and pain mixed in with it, but hope was the strongest flavor. He pulled himself upright and looked out into the sheeting rain at the approaching lights. He had strength at last, a force of will. Since that afternoon, in Miseramus, in formal E of Petropolis, when he'd been stupid enough to look into the flecked and let the demon into his soul in the first place, he hadn't felt this strong. He could do this. He could beat this. He went blind. No, not blind. Deaf. No, not deaf. Falling. He was falling. There was a pit filled with the darkest smoke of old night, and a blemish of forgotten suns, decaying into oblivion, and an ohone moaning that crackled like an untuned vox. It was there, in the darkness, swooping around him as he fell into the infinite, his mouth yelling but making no sound. He knew this. He knew what this was. It had happened before. The thing in the darkness swooped closer, pale and cold, yet burning. It was anguished and spavined, old and so, so dreadful. It snorted like a beast in Carl's head. Terrible pressure pushed his eyes back into their sockets. Claws rammed up into his nostrils and dragged out his tongue until it was tight and stretched. Molten lead poured into his ears, suffocating all sounds. He toppled over, pulling the chain tight, wailing in distress. Black, stinking blood suddenly welled out of his mouth, nostrils, and tear ducts. Cramps viced and wrenched at his intestines. His legs exhibited a sudden, palsied tremor. One by one, the rings he had collected snapped and pinged off the swelling fingers of his right hand. Carl Thonius screamed. He decided he wanted to die after all. Really, properly die. And soon. He let the buzzing out. The pain had become too much. It had been inside him for so long, wearing him down, wearing him out. A lifetime, so it seemed. Buzzing, buzzing, buzzing. His vision returned. For a bare instant, he saw Slight, face to face. Thonius's eyeballs burst, and jellied matter dribbled down his cheeks. The rain pelted down on him. It was the last hour of Carl Thonius's human existence. It would be the most miserable and ghastly 60 minutes anyone would ever endure. Chapter 9. They walk out into the storm to greet us. Gunmen, hireling guards, weapons ready. I count 20 of them. I taste the old high wall behind them, and find it full of automated weaponry. I fear I am too weak for this, too slow. A different me, a younger me, might have done this. Not anymore. Not after the door. Words are all I have left. I hope they will be enough. Below me, amongst the armed men, I see Kalzean and Moloch coming out through the wall's gate, their hands raised to fend off my cutter's downwash. It's a bad night. I've seldom seen a storm this wild. Set us down, Master Unworth, I say. His flying has been superlative.
With directness, he replies.
We drop, thrusters gunning. We settle beside the other lander lashed to the rock-lift landing.
Thank you, Sholto, I say, as I move towards the hatch. The hatch folds open. Rain sprays in. It's a really bad night. I hover down outside onto the landing and face Kalzean and his waiting troops. Moloch himself hangs back, peering at me. This is a strange moment.
Hello, Zygmunt.
Gideon.
There's no time to fight each other, Zygmunt. That goes for you too, Kalzean. Slight is here.
Here?
Moloch echoes me.
How could he be here?
That's enough of that, Kalzean cries out, walking forwards to take control of the standoff. There's a small, robed woman beside him. She's a blunter, not a good one, but the best Kalzean could afford, and she's good enough to keep my mind back.
Gideon,
Kalzean cries, as if welcoming an old friend. He approaches across the rain-swept rock, arms wide, accompanied by his gunmen and his blunter.
Gideon, so wonderful to see you. I thought I'd killed you.
You came close,
my voxponder crackles back.
Very close.
No harm done, then,
he laughs.
What brings you here?
As I said quite plainly, Slight, I reply.
I see Moloch take a step forwards. In all our encounters up to this point, I've never seen him scared. He's scared now.
Slight, chuckles Kalzean.
Gideon, he's not here. Oh, he most surely is, I answer. I can taste him. Turn off your blunter and feel the truth. Turn off my blunter? Seriously, Gideon, you're an Alpha Plus psyker. What makes you think I'd do something as suicidal as that? Self-preservation, I reply. My interrogator, Carl Thonius, is hosting Slight. If he's not here already, he will be soon. You are going to die, Kalzian, all of you. The warp is not selective in its predations.
Thonius,
asked Moloch, pushing forward through the gang of gunmen.
Your man, Thonius.
Yes, Zygmunt, Carl Thonius. I don't know how or why, but he was the one infected. Moloch approaches my chair. He crouches down in the fierce rain and embraces it. It is a strange gesture for a mortal enemy to make, but it is earnest. He is friendless, and he is scared.
Gideon, he whispers. Kalzian can't be trusted.
Oh, and you can be trusted, can you, Zygmunt? He leans back and gazes dully at the hull of my chair.
Of course I can't, Gideon, but this is a different scale of trust. I understand what Slight means. Kalzian doesn't. We need to be of one mind and one purpose now.
I agree.
Oh, good. Good.
Orfeo, I venture. Can we reach some compact here, against a mutually destructive foe? Kalzian shrugs. A woman with a hard face and close-cropped hair walks out onto the landing behind him and hands him a control wand.
You sent for this, sir? She says.
Thank you, Lay.
Last chance, Kalzian, I say. Agreeing with the proposal you made to me.
It's too late, he says. As of about half an hour ago, I got everything I ever wanted.
He clicks the wand, and a void shield suddenly covers him, opaque and fizzling in the rain.
Kill them, he says. Kill them all. Moloch, too.
The sentry guns clatter. The gunmen raise their weapons. They open fire. Kalzian, shielded, walks calmly back into the rambling hulk of Elmingard. Chapter 10. The broadside of automatic fire hammered down on the landing area. The gunfire was deafening, and the strobe of muzzle flashes blinding. Ravenna's cutter took several punishing hits. Get away, Sholto, Ravenna yelled. The cutter took off and dropped away out of sight over the lip of the cliff, wounded and pluming smoke. As the firestorm began, Ravenna had desperately raised a force wall with the last of his strength. The hard rounds and lasfire laid down by Kalzian's men and the wall defences spanged off it. Ravenna projected the psi barrier wide enough to shield Moloch as well as himself. It seemed odd to be expending precious effort trying to protect a man he had spent a large part of his life trying to kill. Shells and lasbolts continued to punch against Ravenna's shield, rippling and dimpling the air in brief crater patterns.
You can't hold this back forever,
Moloch yelled.
If there's any luck left in this accursed galaxy, Ravenna replied, I won't have to. Now would be a good time,
he sent, with as much willpower as he could spare. On the other side of the monastic wall, more hired guns were massing at Slade's orders to protect the landing. They came running from several directions, arming weapons and running link checks. The gunfire beyond the wall was a rattling, coughing blurt of sound.
Fan out, ordered Eldrick, in charge of the support unit. Some of you get on the wall top. Heavy weapons to the gate.
Eldrick paused suddenly. Some of his men ran on past him.
Where the hell did that come from?
He asked. There was a door in the lower terrace wall. It was made of wood, a very ordinary old door in a very ordinary frame. It looked as if it had always been there, but Eldrick was quite certain he'd never seen it before. The door opened. A small girl, barely a teenager, stepped out into the rain and looked around with innocent fascination. She held an ornate key in her hand.
Hello,
she said to Eldrick with a bright smile.
Who the hell are you?
Asked Eldrick. She's with me, said Angharad Esu Swedir. The towering Carthayan swordswoman came out of the open doorway with such virile speed, Eldrick didn't have time to raise his weapon. His eyes went wide at the sight of her, a goddess in armor. Eviscerex, cut him in half.
Get back, child, Angharad hissed, and Ayasov scooted into the shadows by the door. Angharad became a blur in the rain and lightning, her cloak and her braided hair flying, her saber flashing. She ripped into the squad Eldric had been assembling. In the confusion, few of them were able to tell exactly what was happening, although it was patently obvious that they were being slaughtered. A few got off hasty shots. Screams echoed, and lopped limbs spun into the air. Arterial blood squirted up into the torrential rain. Nail and Kiss followed Angharad out of the door. He wore an armored body glove and carried a Voss-pattern automatic grenade launcher, heavy and pugnacious, with a fat drum magazine. Patience was wearing a dark green body glove with long black boots and a billowing overskirt. The pleats of the skirt contained dozens of concealed kine blades. Four needle blades already circled around her. They moved fast, following Angharad's trail of destruction. The flagstones were slick with rain and swilling blood. The steam of entrails and open bodies fumed in the cold air. Nail fired two rounds from the launcher, lobbing them down the length of the approach. He was rewarded by a meaty fireball that hurled rock chips in all directions. He sent another round over into the gate itself, throwing two of Kalzean's gunmen headlong with the blast, and then ran forwards, firing single grenades up at the backs of the sentry pods built into the old wall. The grenades were magnetic. Each one thumped onto a pod's metal cowling and stuck fast. A sentry gun exploded, blown out of the wall top in a fire shock and a rain of bricks. A second blew out, and then a third. Each pod had been firing on full auto until the moment it was obliterated. Nail took out a fourth pod and paused to reload the drum mag. His handiwork had torn holes along the monastic wall like a gum with the teeth extracted. There was a sharp tang of physoline in the air. Kiss brought down a gunman on the wall steps with her kine blades, and then reached out with her telekinesis into the mouldering bricks and stones of the wall itself. She found the hot, heavy power cables and data wire bundles that fed the rest of the wall's automatic defenses. Gritting her teeth, she pulled. A long, fat snake of armored trunking tore out of the wall in a shower of plaster and masonry. It came clean out like the spine of a cooked fish, and then snapped in two places, sheeting electrical sparks and voltage flashes across the wet stone. The remaining wall defenses went dead.
Gideon?
That's better. Thank you.
Outside, on the gale-swept landing, Ravenna began to move forwards, Moloch close behind him. The ground in front of them had been chewed to smoking pulp by the bombardment that had, until a moment before, been hammering them relentlessly. Ravenna was able to slacken his shield at last, and did so with relief. The only shots coming their way were from the blue-suited gunman Kalzean had left on the landing. Ravenna popped his chair's cannon pods from their recesses and cut down two of them. The others began to flee back through the gate into Elmingard, firing as they went. Kiss, Nail, and Angharad were waiting for them. By the time Ravenna and Moloch came through the gate, the only gunmen still alive were the ones who had been wise enough to flee up into the banked terraces of the clifftop fastness.
Start moving. Start searching.
Are you sure he's here?
Asked Nail.
I'm sure. He's hard to read, hard to pinpoint, because he's not really Carl anymore. But he's here. I can hear him screaming.
What do we do if we find him? Asked Kiss.
Call for me.
The three of them ran off up the steps, onto the terraces. In under a minute, Ravenna and Moloch could hear more shooting, and the ominous crump of Nail's launcher.
Ayasub, stay here, by the door. Ravenna told the girl. She nodded.
Let's follow the others,
Ravenna sent to Moloch.
Do you have a plan?
Asked Moloch.
No, this is entirely improvised. I am just hoping we can find Thonius before it's too late.
Why weren't you telling your people?
Moloch asked.
I don't know what you mean, Zygmunt.
Come on, Gideon. Don't try to trick a trickster. What were you keeping from them?
They moved up a mouldering flight of steps and onto one of the lower terraces. The dark, interlocking bulk of Elmingard rose above them in the storm.
That it's already too late. This place is radiating a psychic force that's off the scale. I daren't probe it in any detail, because it would burn out my mind. There is no question that Slight is here.
So, I return to my original question. Is there a plan?
I was hoping you might have some suggestions. Demonology is one of your specialities, Zygmunt. I was also hoping that Kalzean might have tools or resources to help us.
Kalzean's playing his own game,
Moloch replied, dismissively.
But his house is full of arcane trinkets and talismans.
It's possible there might be something that could aid us. However, I've been studying Kalzean's collection for weeks, and I haven't found anything so far that would do. Believe me, I've searched diligently.
He paused thoughtfully.
As for my own talents, I don't know. I have dabbled, I have studied, I have bound certain lesser fiends, and created a demon host or two over the years. I understand the basic principles of gate and portal rituals, but Slight is a Demonicus Arcana Majoris. I would never try to summon him, because even with the correct rites and wards, he would be too powerful to bind. As it is, he's already here. It's long past the time for prophylactic rituals.
Thunder splintered the sky.
The only control a man can ever have over a demon is by way of transaction,
Moloch said.
A man provides the demon with a way into our dimension, and in exchange, the demon is bound by the terms of that favor. It is a very complex, hazardous thing to do, and takes years of precise preparation to pull off. If a demon is already here, in our universe, there is no transaction left to hold it to. No terms, Gideon. There is no way of asserting power or command over it, because it owes us nothing and wants nothing from us. It is simply a material fact, ungoverned by mortal powers.
What about banishment? Moloch laughed.
Like binding, it's a complex process. It takes months or years of preparatory skill. It also requires the correct time and place.
And this isn't the correct time or place?
Does it look like it to you?
I'm not going to give up. We have to try. While we still have life in our bodies, we have to try something. You know the layout of this place, Moloch. Take me to Kalzean's trinkets and help me search for that something.
Kalzean's hired guns offered resistance to the bitter end. Nail came up some crumbling stone steps onto a paved terrace several levels above Ravenna and Moloch, and immediately came under renewed fire. Lazshot shrieked at him from a large doorway across the terrace, forcing him into cover behind a stone urn that quickly became a shapeless lump. He, Kiss, and Angharad had been obliged to fight every step of the way up into Elmingard, and he was down to his last few grenades. He switched to his heavy auto-pistol, keeping the launcher in reserve. There was no backup to call for. Kiss had split to the left a few minutes earlier, heading into what looked like the domestic quarters. They both lost touch with Angharad before that. In her warrior fury, she'd simply stormed ahead, expecting them to keep up. From the screams emanating from a nearby wing of the place, she'd found suitable work to occupy herself. The rain was getting worse. Nail had seen lightning strike the roofline of Elmingard at least twice in the last 5 minutes. A black cloud, blacker than the night itself, whirled like a halo around the upper ramparts of the building. He didn't like to dwell on what might be causing that. Nail also didn't want to notice the sweet, rancid smell that he kept catching on the wind. Putrefaction, the cloying scent of the warp. The gunman at the doorway had him pinned. With a grunt of resignation, Nail hoisted up his launcher and banged a grenade into the air. It landed in the doorway and detonated in a sheet of fire and grit. He was up and running at once. Two gunmen lay dead, mangled by the blast. Another staggered, deafened, in the ruin of the doorway. Part of the building facade had collapsed, and smoke poured out of the broken door. Letting his slung launcher bang against his hip as he ran, Nail drew his auto-pistol and capped the staggering man as he went in past him. The hall inside was thick with smoke. Another survivor was crawling around on the debris-strewn floor on his hands and knees. Nail put the wretch out of his misery, and then headed on. The smoke began to clear. He found himself in the door arch of a large room with a high roof. Lightning backlit the large, leaded windows. The room was a dining hall of sorts. It was dominated by a huge refectory table of old, sturdy timber, big enough to seat 30. There were the chairs to prove it. Nail took a step forwards, and two heavy rounds exploded against the wall beside him, blitzing out plaster and stone chips. Nail hurled himself forwards and rolled across the floor, using the end of the hefty table as cover. Another heavy shot whooshed past. He knew the distinctive sound, a bolt pistol. From the other end of the chamber, Lucius Vorna came out to play. The flashes of lightning outside glinted off his pearly armor. He fired his bolt pistol as he advanced, blasting splintered holes in the table.
"That you, Nail? Is that you?" he roared. "Oh, probably,"
Nail replied, crouching under the table end and looking around desperately for an option. Vorna snorted.
"I'm gonna mess you up, Harlan. Don't frig with me.
Be a man, and come out and take it. I'm going to say no, Nail answered.
Another bolt round tore clean through the tabletop and fractured the floor tiles beside him. Vorna grabbed hold of the long table with his left hand. The fingers of his metal gauntlet sank into the wood. With a whine of power armor, he hurled the huge table right over. It left the ground and crashed down on its side, shattering some of the chairs. Nail was left crouching on the open tiles, his cover removed. He looked up at Vorna, 5 meters away.
Nail,
Vorna growled, a smile crossing his face.
You know what this is? Yeah, end of story, said Nail.
He fired the grenade launcher he was clutching against his chest. The grenade round hit Vorna in the sternum, with enough kinetic force to knock him back several steps. Recovering his balance, the grizzled bounty hunter looked down. The round had magnetically attached itself to his breastplate. Vorna scrabbled at it to knock it off. It exploded. The blast sent Nail sprawling along the floor. It threw Vorna's mighty, spread-eagled form violently across the chamber in the other direction, demolishing the far doors as he ploughed into them. Nail picked himself up and hobbled down the room to the wreckage of the doors. Smoke threaded the air. He could see Vorna's corpse on its back, half buried in broken hardwood door panels. The armor of his upper torso was buckled and blackened, and his face was a raw, red mask of burnt flesh. Nail peered down at his old partner in crime for a moment. He'd always wondered how this story would end. The corpse grabbed him by the right ankle. With a whip-crack snap, it jerked Nail down onto his back. Winded, Nail tried to struggle, but Vorna was already rising, black eyes burning savagely out of the blast-flayed remains of his face. Blood wept from the seared flesh. Vorna picked Nail up by the throat and lifted him off the floor. With his left hand, he tore the grenade launcher off Nail's body and chucked it aside. Then he threw Nail back into the dining room. Nail landed hard, dazed. Vorna came to him and picked him up again, with both hands this time. He raised him high and threw him a second time. Nail's flailing body hit one of the dining room's grand windows and smashed through it in a blizzard of glass and broken leading. Nail fell 6 meters and landed on the gray slates of an annex roof below. His impact shattered some of the slates and made a dent. He lay on the damaged roof in the torrential rain, twisted and unconscious. Lightning flared. A fork of it struck the ridge of a nearby roof, exploding the heavy tiles and exposing black rafters that began to burn. Vorna turned away from the shattered window, breathing in long, sucking rasps. He walked slowly across the dining room, found his bolt pistol, and picked it up. He returned to the window. Small fragments of glass were still falling out of the remaining twists of leading, tinkling as they hit the ground. Rain blew in, stinging Vorna's ruined face. He slammed a new clip into his bolt pistol, racked it, and leaned out of the window to take aim at Harlan Nail's helpless form. Chapter 11
I hope you know what the hell you're doing, Layla Slade said to Kul'zean, as they advanced briskly up through the northern layers of Elmingard.
I always know what I'm doing, he replied jauntily. Now, you put him where I told you to put him, didn't you?
In the old tower, yes. Slade looked at Kul'zean. Believe me, if I'd have known what he was when I was doing it, I wouldn't have gone near him.
A squad of 6 hired guns were escorting them. At her words, they exchanged troubled looks.
Everything's all right, Kul'zean said. Everything's all right, gentlemen. Believe me, you'll all be receiving triple pay for tonight's work.
We're getting reports, sir, said Zabo, leading the fire team. The Inquisitor's forces have taken the gate and are inside Elmingard. We've lost men. A lot of men.
Our distinguished foe won't trouble us much longer,
Kul'zean said confidently.
Now, come along.
They ran across a courtyard, braving the relentless rain, and entered another wing of the sprawling building.
Thonius is really slight,
Slade asked Kul'zean as they strode along. She kept her voice low.
This is what I have learned from the Swole woman, and she was in no position to lie. It's sweet. I think she'd actually been trying to protect him.
Orfeo, slight is...
Slight is perfect. Slight is the thing I've spent my life working towards. And look, Layla, he comes to me in the end almost by chance. Ah, the irony.
I don't understand what you think you can achieve. Moloch...
Zygmunt was a fine enough distraction, but there was no real future in that relationship. I believed for a long time he would be an invaluable asset to my work, but I hadn't taken into account his character. So difficult, so hard to govern.
So smart, said Slade darkly.
Yes, that too. You must have noticed, these last few weeks, how we were falling out. It was just a matter of time before it turned nasty.
Slade shuddered. I think it's turned nasty already, she remarked.
Oh, Poulet, you know what I mean. He was so paranoid.
Was he? She asked. Or was he the only one who really knew what kind of disaster Slight represented?
Calzean stopped and turned to face Slade. The men came to a halt behind them.
Lay, listen to me. Have I ever let you down? Have I? You've seen some of the shining weapons I have at my disposal. They've taken me years to collect and years to learn how to use. Moloch, for all his smart mind, is just a dabbler. I am a professional in these things. Experienced, informed, detached. Slight is just another asset for me to exploit. Another shining weapon. Albeit the brightest and shiniest I've ever acquired.
You think? You think you can control a demon of the Major Arcana?
Calzean laughed.
Oh, I know I can. Control him and bind him. Subjugate him. I sent our savants up to the tower just before Ravana made his grand entrance. As we speak, they are completing the necessary rituals and enslaving Slight's power to my command.
Slade hesitated before responding.
Sir, I advise caution, she said, taking out her handgun and fitting it with one of the specially prepared clips. I have always admired your ambition.
Thank you, Lay.
May I ask what you intend to do?
That's just it, said Orfeo Calzean with a winning smile. I can do anything I want. Anything at all. With Moloch as an ally, I might have taken down a government or seized control of a world. But with Slight, oh, Layla, the whole Imperium is mine. Start dreaming. I'll soon be able to grant you any heart's desire.
Right now, she replied, I'd settle for being somewhere else. What about Ravana and his people?
Slight will destroy them, at my order. I'd like you to contact the Divine Frattery later tonight. I've kept a line of communication open with Freighter Stefoy. They will want to know of Slight's birth. They may wish to come and worship him. Encourage them. The Frattery, with their long-standing knowledge of Slight, will be useful to have around, an added guarantee. Now, can we proceed?
They left the northern wing and stepped out into the storm. Zabo's men lit lamp packs. Rain swirled into their faces as they struggled up the track to the astronomer's tower. Incandescent lightning boomed like atomic blasts overhead in the murk. The ragged tower formed an ominous black shape through the sheeting rain. They soldiered on, their clothes drenched, arms raised to protect their faces. Calzean reignited his void shield for cover against the elemental fury, and the rain sizzled and steamed off its field. Then the rain stopped, and there was utter calm. They stopped outside the tower's base, steam rising off their soaked clothing. There was shocking peace and silence.
Eye of the storm,
Calzean suggested, with a nervous laugh. Slade looked back down the track. 10 yards away, the rain was falling. It was falling like a monsoon deluge all across the black silhouette of Elmingard. Lightning jagged the sky. They could hear none of it.
This is...
one of Zabo's men said, raising his weapon.
Oh, throne,
said Zabo, looking up. The sky directly above the tower was bare of clouds. The black weight of the thunderhead hung over the mountains, but had swirled and parted form a deep chimney of clear air over the astronomer's broken edifice. Alien stars glittered high above. They were moving, circling like fireflies, forming and reforming constellations and the spirals of unknown galaxies.
Let's go back, said Slade,
her voice hollow in the still air.
Orfeo, please.
It's just the binding, Calzean told her. Our savants have done their work. This area is becalmed because of the rites they have performed. Slight is bound.
What's that stink?
Asked Sabo. A noxious odor oozed out of the black tower. A charnel air. Slade moved forwards, her weapon aimed. Calzean followed her. They stepped through the doorway into the base of the tower. rainwater dripped down from the upper levels. Scraps of torn parchment, sodden and limp, littered the floor. Slade saw the stone block she'd shackled Thonius to an hour before. The remnants of the chain trailed from it, broken and bent.
Orfeo?
What?
Orfeo, look.
The walls around them were decorated with something dark and sticky. It took them a moment to comprehend what they were looking at. Calzean's savants were dead. Their pulverized meat and bones were smeared in a thin, clotting layer onto stone all around the tower. Blood ran down and congealed at the base of the walls.
Layla,
Calzean whispered. She grabbed his hand and dragged him back out of the tower. Szabo and his men were waiting there.
We're leaving, she told them.
Sir? She's right,
mumbled Calzean, trying to think straight.
She's right, Szabo. We're leaving.
So soon.
They turned. Something that had once been Carl Thonius stood in the doorway of the tower. He was naked, his clothes burnt off him. A ghastly red light radiated from the core of his being, illuminating him from within. His skin had become transparent, and his skeletal structure was revealed like a Medicaid scan. His right arm was fleshless from the middle of the upper half. What remained was a scorched bone limb that ended in vast black talons.
Calzean, he said.
When his mouth opened, they could see flames dancing inside.
Slight,
stammered Orfeo Calzean.
Slight, I command you.
Don't be such an idiot,
Slade cried. The thing's mouth opened. It kept opening. It stretched and distended like a snake's jaw, far wider than any human mouth could ever open. Then it exhaled with a dull, buzzing roar. A wave of wretched vapor streamed out of its maw and engulfed them. Szabo's men recoiled, gasping and vomiting. All of the silver buttons on their smart blue outfits tarnished and went black. Two of them fell down, overcome with nausea. Gagging, Slade raised her weapon.
Run,
she gasped.
Run, Orfeo.
She started to fire. Szabo and his remaining men added their firepower to hers. Their last shots bounced off the demonic figure, but Slade's special loads had been aimed low, into the soil at its feet. They burst on impact, releasing their contents from their bondage in the specially engraved shells. Gibbering warp forms bloomed like unholy flowers, sprouting from the earth. Octas and clawbrills and other hideous subdemons that Calzean had painstakingly captured and imprisoned over the years manifested as they were released, and struck at Slight in mindless wrath. Cackling, Slight dismembered them, shredding their bodies like wet sacks, spraying ichor and pus in all directions. His black talons ripped through their writhing masses and reduced them to dissolving ectoplasmic sludge. Slight stepped forwards through the last of the warp things. He made a barking sound, like a dog fox, and the ground split. Insectile vermin, glittering black, some the size of lobsters or small felines, poured out of the ground in a frenetic, clicking flood.
Run!
Slade screamed. Calzean started to run. The insects enveloped him, burning and falling away as the void shield threw them back. Szabo and his men were engulfed. The seething mass of chittering bodies covered them from head to toe and stripped them of clothing and meat. Bare skeletons, crawling with black things, collapsed onto the ground and disarticulated. Szabo was the last to fall. He turned his gun on himself and blew off his own head. The air was full of flies, buzzing and swarming. Calzean ran. Slade ran after him, wailing. There were things on her arms and her legs, biting and scurrying.
Orfeo!
Layla, protect me!
She turned, loyal to the end, clapped a fresh clip into her weapon, and faced the burning demon, striding after them. She started to fire. Calzean ran on regardless. He heard Layla Slade shrieking, and shuddered when the shrieking cut off abruptly. He kept running. In the heart of Elmingard, Siskind and the others heard awful roaring and baying coming from outside. A dire stink suddenly permeated the place.
That's it, Siskind told Ornales. We're leaving.
The rest of Calzean's staff and employees were already fleeing. Tables and chairs were overturned in their efforts to exit. There was screaming and shouting. The noises echoed down the hallways.
"Is the flyer locked?"
Siskind asked his first mate as they hurried along.
"It'll only open to our voice prints," Onales assured him. "What in hell is happening?"
Siskind drew his las pistol.
"I have no idea, and no wish to know," he said.
A man slammed into them. The silver buttons of his blue wool clothing had turned black. Siskind saw how every metal surface in the place was tarnished and soiled. The air had gone bad. The stink was everywhere.
"Take me with you! Take me with you, shipmaster!"
the man pleaded. Siskind shot him.
"This is madness!" he growled.
Ornalis said nothing, but drew his own weapon. They reached a stairwell that led down into the southern terraces. Scullery boys and domestics ran past them, trying to find a place of refuge. Siskind and Ornalis started down the steps. Plighton appeared on the staircase below them, hauling Kara Swole. She cried out as she saw Siskind. Siskind started shooting. Plighton dropped Kara and fired her shotgun. The blast took Ornalis in the chest and hurled him back up the stairs. He landed limp and rolled back down a step or two. He hit Plighton in the right hip and the left shoulder and spun her back down the staircase. She screeched in pain as she bounced off the wall and fell on her face. Leaping down two steps at a time, Siskind came to a halt over Kara's body. She looked up at him, blankly.
"Kara!"
Plighton yelled in pain, doubled up and writhing at the base of the stairs. Siskind pointed his hand weapon at Kara Swole. The first las shot blew out his spine. The second chopped the back off his head as cleanly as an axe blow. Siskind staggered, gaping, smoke streaming out of his mouth. Blood poured down the back of his expensive coat of vitrine glass. He toppled over the stair rail and fell. Belknap clattered down the staircase to reach Kara, slinging his las rifle onto his shoulder. He grabbed her and covered her face with kisses.
"I thought I'd lost you," he whispered.
Patrick, she moaned.
"Help Maud."
He looked over her head at Plighton, thrashing in anguish on the deck below.
"Yeah," he said. "Of course."
Leaning out of the broken window, Lucius Vorner fired his bolt pistol at Nail on the cratered roof below. Nothing happened. He glanced at his weapon. It was a trusty tool and had never malfunctioned before. He tried again. He realized that something was preventing his finger from squeezing the trigger. He turned instinctively. A kine blade impaled him through one eye like an arrow. Two more struck into his chest. Patience Kiss walked towards him across the ruined dining hall, her skirt flowing.
"There's more where that came from," she promised.
Vorner tried to fire at her. She lashed out with the full fury of her telekinesis and grabbed him around the neck, throttling him. Vorner choked. Kiss raised her arms like a sorcerer casting a spell and propelled him up off the floor and out through the window. Advancing, she lifted his struggling bulk up into the sky and suspended him there. A bolt of lightning slammed into his metal-clad form. A second later, two more monumental lightning strikes hit him.
"End of story?"
she asked, sarcastically, her hands raised.
"You wish,"
Vorner gasped, blood streaming out of his mouth. Kiss determinedly held the bounty hunter in the sky a little longer. Eight more forks of lightning slammed into Vorner in rapid succession. His armored carcass began to burn. Once it was blazing like a torch, she hurled it away. It arced across the rooftops of Elmingard like a comet, leaving a trail of fire behind it. Kiss leaned out of the window.
"Harlan," she yelled. "You alive down there? Harlan!"
Chapter 12. They hurried across the rose terrace into the solar. Ravenor led the way.
"Of course, I knew it was Thonius all along,"
Moloch said.
"What?" "Oh, not at the time. But now, it all makes sense."
"How?"
"At Petropolis, Gideon. In the sacristy. I came so close to my dreams."
"I know you did."
"Gideon, you'd have enjoyed them too. Admired them. Enuncia was so perfect, so clean."
"Zygmunt." Moloch shrugged.
"At the point of creation, I was interrupted by your people, Kara Swole and Carl Thonius.
Of course, I dealt with them quickly. Then Slight appeared.
Slight was there?
Yes, Gideon. You do not realize what actually thwarted my efforts on Eustace Majoris. Slight stopped me. Slight hurt me. But for Slight, I would have triumphed.
Holy throne. The demon just appeared, and I was too scared to think. Calzean and his woman helped me escape. But now it's so obvious. Slight was there because Thonius was there. Thonius was Slight. He destroyed my plans for Anuncia.
Ravenna's chair coasted to a halt in the middle of the solar. Rain spattered in through the open doors behind them.
I thought it was me, Sigmund. I thought I was the one who'd beaten you.
Slight takes the credit for that, does he?
Rather, I think, Carl Thonius,
Moloch replied.
Now let's get on with this.
He started to rummage through the crates Calzean had left stacked in the chamber.
Come along, Gideon.
Moloch paused in his search and looked back at the support chair.
What's the matter?
Nothing.
You never told me how you found out,
said Moloch. A nascent psyker called Zael. He knew it all. I have a feeling he left it too late to tell me.
What's the matter?
You keep asking me that, Sigmund.
I'll keep asking until you tell me.
Very well. Things have changed. I can feel it. The storm's shifting. The magnitude of power has increased. The demon is on the move, coming closer. I can feel him closing in. He's entered the house. We've only got a few minutes left. Can't you smell him?
Then this is all a waste of time, said Moloch.
The end door of the solar burst open, and Calzean scrambled in, his void shield still flickering around him. It was close to failure. He began to ransack the drawers at the far end of the room. His shield blinked out. Calzean turned, suddenly aware he was not alone. He snatched out an auto-sub and aimed it at Moloch and Ravenna.
Don't be so silly, Ravenna said.
He's coming! He's coming! Calzean cried.
He's right behind me! He killed my poor Layla!
Moloch flicked his right arm. Calzean's pistol flew out of his hand and tumbled in the air. Moloch caught it and shot Calzean through the belly. Calzean crashed back into the chest of drawers and fell down, clutching his abdomen. His face went white. There was a look of speechless surprise on his face.
Was that really necessary?
You have no idea, said Moloch.
Calzean was bleeding out. His agony was tangible and pressed down on Ravenna's mind like a dead weight. Ravenna was quite sure Moloch had gone for a belly wound because he knew it was an excruciating, lingering way to die.
Calzean, is there anything we can do?
Calzean groaned and coughed up blood.
Help me, a doctor.
I meant about the demon.
The door behind him flew open. Angharad landed like a cat in front of Moloch and sliced the end off his pistol. She was about to gut him. Ravenna threw her back against the wall with psychic force.
No, Angharad, leave him.
He is the devil, she sneered.
There are worse devils abroad tonight.
Angharad glared at Moloch.
We will need him if we want to survive.
Moloch bent over Calzean.
Orfeo, listen. What were you looking for when you came in here?
Something. Anything.
Calzean swallowed hard.
I wondered if there was something I'd forgotten. Something I'd overlooked.
Is there? What have you got left? Any shining weapons? Any talismans or incantations that might be efficacious?
Calzean shook his head.
Nothing. Nothing. I have a few rites of banishment, but I'm certain none would be suitable.
Because this isn't the right time. Or place? Ravenna asked. Show us anyway. Calzean gestured weakly at a nearby bookcase.
Third shelf, in the green box.
Moloch rose, slid the box off the shelf, and opened it. He pulled out a thick sheaf of old parchments, bound with a cord.
Banishment rites,
Calzean murmured, pain etched across his face.
All very old, and from a number of sources. The Hech-El deportation is the most complete and the most reliable. I've used it before. It works.
But?
It won't work here. None of them will.
Moloch was speed-reading the crumbling parchments.
He's right.
It's like I told you. To cast out a demon, one must choose the right place and time. One must find a location where the walls between dimensions are tissue thin. A rift or fissure, a place of weakness. There are only a few such places in the entire cosmos, and Elmingard isn't one of them. Any banishment rites we try here are a waste of effort.
He was about to say something else, but his voice cut off. Something flickered and blinked in the corner of the solar. It manifested, just a hazy shimmer, like smoke in sunlight. It was Carl Thonius. Chapter 13. Thonius flickered in and out of reality. He seemed to be moving too fast, like a speeded-up pict sequence.
I told you.
Ravenna, Moloch, and Angharad backed slowly towards the terrace doors. The room's lights dimmed and flashed in time to the lightning. Sprawled near to the manifested spectre, Kalzean whimpered and tried to drag himself away.
Slights,
whispered Moloch.
No, Slights still out there, coming closer. This is an aberration, a random psychic effect, just an echo.
Gideon.
Carl?
Help me.
Throne. Carl.
The spectre sat down in one of the solar's armchairs. Its form continued to jump and flicker as if it was running at the wrong speed, and repeated and overlapped.
Gideon, please. It hurts. Help me.
Carl, it's too late.
Oh, it hurts.
I can beat this. I can.
No, Carl, you can't.
Gideon, I can. If you help me, you owe me. I've been working with you all the way. I stopped Moloch at Metropolis. I did that. Me, Gideon, I made Kara well again. I saved you from the creatures behind the door.
Carl, I realize what you've done. I realize what you've tried to accomplish, but it's too late. You cannot be saved. The demon has consumed you.
The spectre blinked and fluttered in front of them. Blowflies began to collect on the insides of the window panes.
Don't say that, Gideon. Help me beat this. Help me. When Slight took me, I thought it was the end. But then I realized I could control it. I could control it. I could master it. Give me that chance. Imagine what we could do then, you and me. For the Ordos, for the Imperium. I could show you how the warp works. The warp. He's just a phantom. A lie!
Kalzean screeched.
I'm not.
We are witnessing the last remains of Karl's being, driven by his will, said Ravenna. We are witnessing an act of formidable determination.
Gideon!
Ravenna hovered forwards and approached the jumping, bleached-out image.
Carl, if I could help you, I would. Courage such as yours should not go unrewarded, but I cannot help you. You are gone. You were gone the moment Slight flowed into you.
The idea that you can master an entity like Slight is the sort of misguided radicalism you and I used to scoff at.
Your logic has been altered by the corruption inside you. Slight is feeding you excuses and false hopes to wear you down. What you're talking about cannot be countenanced by the Inquisition. It cannot be countenanced by any rational person. It cannot be countenanced by me.
No.
Carl, I'm sorry.
No!
The spectre loses form and control. It quivers, shaking as if caught in a violent earth tremor. I feel the scalding fury of the Psi Force inside it. The windows of the solar rattle and panes crack. The swirls of blowflies cascade into the air like soot. The buzzing is everywhere. Kalzean screams in undignified terror as books and other totemic objects clatter off the shelves and pieces of parchment take flight like paper streamers in a parade. They remind me of the great triumph on Thracian Primaris, where I was mutilated. I am back there, for a moment, walking in the procession, paper streamers and petals showering down around me, Spacian gate looms above me through the blizzard of ticker tape. That was a kind of damnation, one that I have never really come to terms with and never will. What awaits us here, tonight, is a more complete kind of damnation. I call out to Carl, apologizing and placating. I'm sorry, I say. I'm sorry, over and over again. Carl's anguished spectre vibrates itself into smoke with a wild frenzy, the last shreds of it burning and discorporating into a thin sludge of acrid mist. Once he is gone, the solar becalms and falls silent, apart from the buzz of the flies. Outside, the storm rages on, and we can hear other sounds in its cacophony. First, a purring roar that comes and goes with the incessant thunder, and then an immense grinding sound, as if the hog's back peaks are writhing against one another.
"We've no choice but to flee," says Moloch.
I doubt Slight will let us go. Even if we escaped this rock, where would we run to? Slight's reach will be considerable. Moloch looks at me. I can tell his mind is still racing. I can also tell it is churning nothing but frustration and helplessness. Angharad turns, raising her sword. Figures are grouped behind us in the terrace doors, framed by the flapping drapes. Belknap and Kara support the wounded Maud Plighton between them. "Ravana!" Belknap utters in surprise.
"Oh, gods!"
Plighton gasps. Her mind is a seething knot of pain, but I feel her intense relief through it. The unexpected sight of me gives her hope for a moment. "It's good to see you, all three of you," I say. A bow wave of almost unbearable emotion swamps my mind. Kara runs forwards, leaving Belknap to support Plighton, and falls across the front of my chair, hugging it tightly. She is weeping.
"Kara." "You're alive!"
"Kara." She is inconsolable. I try to soothe her, but someone has hurt her. Someone has imprisoned her and tortured her. My poor Kara. There are so many things in her mind. Grief, joy, relief, surprise, love, shame. She believed me to be dead, and she can barely deal with the fact that I'm not. "Kara, it's all right. Kara, who did this to you?" She clutches my chair tighter, her tears leaking out over the metal casing.
"I'm sorry," she wails. "I'm sorry."
"Hush, Kara. It will be all right. Who did this to you?" I reach into her unguarded, fragile mind to see, to soothe. Kalzean had a hand in this. Behind him, I see an older memory of Siskind and Vorna, and Blanche at the inhuman desecrations they performed. "I will find Siskind, I promise, Kara, and I will—" I stop. Behind the toxic memories of Siskind and the brute Vorna, other figures lurk. Karl and Kara herself. I read her deepest secret self, the white-hot center of her torment.
"Oh, Kara."
"I'm sorry, Gideon."
"What's she talking about?" Belknap demands. His love and concern for her burn like a molten ingot in mind space. He sets Plighton down on a couch and comes over. "Kara. Ravana. What?"
"I knew it was Karl. I knew it, and I hid it," she wails.
"Karl blocked your memories," I say. "I can see the scars." She looks up at me.
"Before that, I knew. I knew and I hid it. He made me promise not to tell you. He made me promise not to tell anyone. He just needed time."
She wails again and becomes incoherent.
"What's she saying?"
Belknap asks me. "When did you know?" I ask. "Kara, when did you know?"
"Eustace Majoris, at the sacristy."
"She was there,"
says Moloch, softly.
"She must have seen it all."
"Why did you hide it? Why didn't you tell me?" I ask.
"I owed him so much,"
she murmurs.
"He cured my... I was dying. He cured me. He saved me. He begged me to keep his secret for just a few months, to give him time to study, to find a way to beat it. I couldn't say no. He saved me. What kind of demon does that?"
"The cunning kind," I reply. "And that's the only kind there is."
"But,"
she begins.
"You knew,"
asks Belknap.
"What?" "You knew. You knew Thornius was the demon, and you covered for him."
Belknap takes a step back from us. He is a man of strong, simple emotions. What I read in him now is revulsion and betrayal. It is painful and total. Everything he is thinking and feeling is driven by his focused devotion to the Holy God Emperor. It is the cruelest and ugliest emotion I believe I have ever read, made crueler and uglier because it is sincere.
He saved me,
Kara stammers, looking up at Belknap with tear-reddened eyes. A demon saved you, he replies. For a moment, I fear he is going to strike her. I take no chances. I shove him back with my mind and make him sit down on the couch beside Maud. Sit down, I instruct him. I will deal with this. But she... Sit down, Belknap, and shut up.
I'd do as he suggests, if I were you,
says Moloch. A smile curls his asymmetric lips. Even now, despite the dire circumstances, he can't stop himself from enjoying the ruin this whole affair has reduced my people to.
And why the frig would anyone ever listen to anything you have to say, Moloch?
8 needle-sharp kine blades hover in a spread, less than a finger's length from Moloch's pale face. He swallows. The solar's end door is open. A nail stands there, aiming his auto-pistol down the length of the chamber at Moloch. Nail is battered and hurt, one eye half-closed and swollen. Patience stands beside him, murderous concentration on her face.
Oh, look, says Moloch, with fake enthusiasm. They're all here. Let him be.
Gideon?
Kiss questions, hesitantly.
Let him be. Harlan, put away your gun.
What's he doing here? Kiss asks.
I pull her kind blades away from Moloch's face and discard them on the floor.
The same as us, trying to live until tomorrow. We have pooled our resources.
I hope the frig you know what you're doing, says Kiss.
She hurries to Kara and holds her, peeling her off my chair. Nail crosses to Angharad and they embrace, kissing.
So, says Plighton from the couch, with an enforced brightness to mask her pain. We got a plan yet?
No,
Moloch and I answer together. The mountains shake. Elmingard shudders. A roar comes out of the night, so loud and throaty it bruises our souls. It is part scream, part wail, part howl, part bellow, a drawn-out ululation of huge volume that blots out the fury of the storm. It is the roar of a predator, the voice of a billion-billion-year-old predator that has just woken and realized it is hungry. Chapter 14 Kara rose to her feet, breaking Kiss's embrace. She wiped her cheeks. She dared not glance at Belknap for fear of seeing the look in his eyes.
Get out of here, she said. Get everyone out of here, Gideon.
Kara.
Get out of here while you still can. All of you.
You'll do what? Ravenna asked.
I'll hold him back as long as I can.
How? Asked Kiss.
I'll talk to him. I'll talk to Karl. He trusts me. I can slow him down.
No, said Ravenna. I've already spoken to him. Karl is trying his best, but he's lost to us. Any tenuous control he once had has gone. He's dead, and Slight is in control. In full control.
Gideon is cooked,
mumbled Kulzean, propped up against the foot of the chest of drawers, his life's collection of precious papers littered around him, scorched.
I've seen Slight, like a mockery of Tholius, using his form, twisting it. Such power, such radiance.
He brushed flies away from his face. His skin had taken on the pallor of a corpse. He was sitting in a puddle of his own blood.
That wasn't Slight, sneered Moloch. That was just Slight's way in, his harbinger, like a limb extended through a door. Thonius, powers rest his soul, is Slight's conduit. What we saw in the sacristy that night, Orfeo, and what you undoubtedly witnessed tonight, was just the tip of the iceberg. You know what an iceberg is, don't you, Orfeo?
Of course.
Thonius is just the gate. The rest is coming through.
The awful, primordial roar shook the room again. The flies billowed up.
Listen, said Moloch, almost enraptured by the sounds of the warp. Here it comes.
Let me try, Gideon, said Kara. Please, let me try to talk to him.
No, Kara, Ravenna replied.
Please, let me...
Without warning, she went into some kind of shock and collapsed across the front of his chair, her limbs spasming. Kiss tried to hold her steady. Despite himself, Belknap rose to help.
"I've got her," Kiss told him.
"Gideon,"
Kara's mouth said. Kiss pulled back, unnerved. Kara rose, her eyes closed. Ravener knew at once that someone, something, was wearing her.
"Gideon, please, this is my last chance."
"There is no last chance, Carl," Ravener said. "I've explained this to you. Let Kara go."
"Oh, please, you don't understand."
Kara's mouth moved slackly, as if language was an alien, unfamiliar material passing through it. The blowflies settled on her face in increasing numbers and scurried in and out of her mouth. They covered her eyes like scabs.
"I only have a few moments left. I'm hanging on by my fingertips. He's eating me, Gideon. He's eating me up."
"I can't help you, Carl."
"You bastard! You bastard!"
Kara Swole's mouth cried.
"All the years I served you, and this is how you repay me! Save me! Save me!"
"For throne's sake," cried Nail, "do something!"
"Can't you help him, Gideon?" demanded Patience Kiss. "Please!"
"I can't," said Ravener simply. "I can't, and I shouldn't, and I won't." Everyone stared at him, even Moloch.
"Then kill it! Kill me! Banish it! Banish it! Give me peace!"
Kara Swole swayed. Crawling flies covered her from head to toe. "We can't banish it. We haven't the means, and this location is not right for—"
"Don't be such an idiot! Of course you have the means. You brought a hole in the warp here with you. You can make this the right time and place."
Ravener paused. Revelation seeped through him. He looked at Thonius's unwilling avatar in grief and gratitude.
"Oh, Carl, the things you know."
Manic laughter filled the air. As one, the flies lifted off Kara, and she fell heavily onto the solar floor. "Help her, Patience," Ravener voxponded. He turned to Moloch.
"The door. He means the door, Zygmunt. We can make our own damn rift."
Wonder crossed Moloch's face.
"Oh, of course,"
he said. Then he frowned.
"You brought that thing here?"
"Yes."
"There's preparation time, you realize,"
Moloch began.
"Get what you need."
Moloch hurried to the far end of the room and began a violent search of Kalzean's collection. He found a small leather case and started to fill it with parchments and other objects. Ravener turned to Kiss. "Does your link still work?" he asked.
"I think so."
"Call to Sholto and request his aid. If he doesn't want to come, tell him I understand. We'll do this anyway." She nodded. "Get everyone down on the landing and tell him, if he's willing, to meet us there."
"Let's go,"
she cried. She scooped up Kara and headed for the terrace doors. Belknap gathered Plighton to himself, and despite her protests of pain, headed out into the storm. Nail, his weapon in hand, remained beside Ravener. "You too, Harlan."
"I'm fine where I am," he replied.
"What about me?"
Kalzean whined.
"Angharad," Ravener directed.
"Do I have to?"
the Carthayan asked sourly.
"Please."
Angharad sheathed a Viscerex in her cross-shoulder scabbard and walked across to Kalzean. He squealed as she lifted him.
"Shut up."
He didn't. He couldn't. Blood dribbled out of him. She carried him like a leaking sack back towards the terrace doors.
"Moloch," Ravener called.
"Almost there. Almost."
Moloch stopped riffling through the junk and looked back at Ravener.
"I know this won't make you very happy, but we'll need blood. Human blood."
Ravener psyched up an unbroken saucer from the floor and held it under Kalzean. It filled quickly.
"Making use of available resources,"
Moloch smiled.
"How very practical."
He paused. He looked up at the end wall of the solar behind him.
"Oh, shit,"
he started to say. The windows blew in like grenade blasts. Rain and wind swirled into the room. The lamps went out. The ancient predator roared again, the concussive force of its voice shaking everything. They could all hear the distant, gigantic grinding sound,
like cliffs scraping against cliffs. Moloch staggered backwards, clutching the leather case. The solar's end door swung open, and red light shone in. The thing that had been Thonius entered, naked, lit from within, fire flaring in its mouth. Its bare black arms swung, weighted by its bunched talons. A carpet of cockroaches and other iridescent black beetles scuttled into the solar around its feet. Backing rapidly away from the demon, Moloch slipped on the scurrying insects and fell. Slight approached him, grinning. Its talons rippled out.
Move, Nail urged, heading for the terrace doors. Leave him!
We can't go without Moloch. He has everything we need. Angharad dropped Kalzean on the floor. The facilitator screamed. Sweeping out her saber, she leapt between the demon and the fallen heretic. Nail yelled out her name. He opened fire at the glowing figure. Ravenna's chair started firing at it too. The heavy rounds bounced off the burning, blackland thing. Angharad's sword did not. She took off its head in one stroke. Pressurized black ichor squirted up out of the severed neck with such force it spattered the ceiling. The thing clawed at her with its jet-black hooks. She took its bone arm off and then cut it entirely in half. "Eviscerex thirsts!" she cried, as the demon fell apart, reducing to dust, its red glow evaporating. "You see?" Angharad said, cocky with triumph. "Sometimes a good sword is all you need." Behind her, Moloch clambered to his feet.
"You stupid bitch! Weren't you listening? That wasn't slight! That's slight!"
The entire end wall of the solar collapsed, brought down by an advancing cliff of wet, beige flesh. Mottled, lumpen tentacles reached out, flapping and snaking from the gigantic mass. Some ended in sucker mouths, foul beaks of clear cartilage that snapped and yawned. Others were tipped by what looked like grasping human fingers. Vast, oozing orifices opened and closed between the roots of the whipping tentacles, and black-tipped transparent teeth, like gigantic quills, interlaced and clattered. Fetid gases exhaled through the pulsing orifices. The demon bulk stank of spoiled meat and disease. The solar gradually disintegrated, its walls giving way under the crushing weight. Angharad slashed her blade at a suppurating wall of demonic flesh, 3 times her height. She tore huge gouges into the bruised, glistening meat and sheared off several tusks and tentacles. Wretched brown ichor gushed out of the wounds. Nail yelled her name again, firing his weapon. Moloch was already fleeing. Ravenna was backing rapidly out through the collapsing frame of the terrace doors. Kalzean, lying in the path of the monster, scrambled helplessly. He squealed as the first of the dripping worm limbs found him. They seized him with their beaks and suckers and constricted around his body. Their touch spread virile corruption. Accelerated decomposition overtook Orfeo Kalzean while he was still alive. He rotted in seconds and dissolved into a mass of wriggling worms and maggots. Another writhing tendril, as fat as a man's arm and as white as a seafloor mollusk, snapped around Angharad's neck and snatched her off her feet. She was sucked into one of the open maws in a single, gurgling inhalation. The flailing, pallid tentacles around the gulping orifice suddenly flushed bright red. Eviscerex clattered to the floor. Nail, in blind rage, ran forwards to where she had been standing a second before. He took up the fallen blade and hacked at the shuddering bulk, as if he could somehow cut it open and drag her back out. Ravenna had moved clear of the collapsing chamber, out onto the terrace. Moloch was with him, holding the leather case to his chest.
"Go, Zygmunt, make things ready," Ravenna said.
Moloch nodded and ran off down the terrace steps. Ravenna looked back.
"Harlan!"
Nail just yowled back in answer, chopping with the saber. He couldn't see what Ravenna could see. The towering wall of demon flesh, ploughing through the solar, was just a small part of a vast mass manifesting on top of Elmingard, a mountain of infected meat, growing all the time. Towers and roofs collapsed under it. In the sheeting rain, it was hard to define any real detail of the mass, except for the black, blistered bulk of it. Jagged tusks, as big as tree trunks, covered its upper flanks like battlements. Vast pseudopods, hundreds of meters long and dozens in girth, rippled and danced up into the sky above from the apex of the mass. The cyclone of storm clouds, many kilometers across, rotated around the dancing limbs like a crown. Ravenna gazed up at the abomination the warp had disgorged onto Elmingard.
"Oh, throne, help us," he said.
Chapter 15.
Stop, pleaded Ayasob. Stop it. Stop it. It's making my head hurt.
Shut up, said Moloch.
Stop. Make him stop. Kiss. Make him stop.
The girl looked up at Patience.
Please.
Shh, said Kiss. It's all right.
But he's spoiling my door. He's spoiling it.
He has to do this, Kiss told her softly.
Moloch was using a stick of chalk to inscribe runes and patterns on the door and the wall around it. He'd already got Kiss to hold one end of a length of twine so that he could measure out distances along the wall and the wet flagstones and mark them out accurately. He was working furiously, copying certain symbols from sheets of parchment that were beginning to disintegrate in the driving rain. The symbols were ugly. Kiss didn't want to look at them. They made her skin crawl. She stayed at his side, however, because the only alternative was to look up at the gargantuan horror bestriding Elmingard, and that was a far more disturbing prospect.
Are you done yet?
She asked.
I'm going as fast as I can, Moloch replied. There is a degree of precision required. This can't be rushed. You want it to work, don't you?
I'm not sure what I want any more, said Kiss.
Moloch patiently scratched with the tip of his chalk stub.
This is an art. One rune imprecisely drawn, one sigil out of alignment, that would doom us to failure.
She didn't reply. Moloch looked up at her.
I often think of Linter, you know.
Don't.
I was very fond of Linter. She was with me for about a year. Yes, I was very fond of her. Until I discovered that Linter had infiltrated my team to betray me, and that her actual name was Patience Kiss.
I won't tell you again. Get on with your work, Moloch.
It was Zenta Malhide, 397.M41. You were very good. Very, very good. The things you did to convince me you were loyal.
Shut up, Kiss spat. Shut your damn mouth.
All your efforts and sacrifices were for nothing.
Moloch smiled.
Because although you and Thonius and Kara and Nail tore my team apart and left me for dead, I survived, as I always survive. I imagine that must have been hard to live with afterwards, Linter.
A kind blade was suddenly hovering, trembling, a thumb's length from his left eye.
Why? Kiss snarled through clenched teeth. Why the hell would you try to goad me like this?
My dear, if this all goes wrong, I want to be sure you'll kill me quickly.
Finish your work, she cried.
Moloch shrugged and got busy with his chalk stick again. Another primordial roar rent the air. They felt the deep vibration of it in their chests. Ayasob yelped. Insect vermin, black and whiskered, had begun to spill down the wall from above. A river of them ran down the nearby steps. Kiss pulled Ayasob to her. She stamped on a few of the bugs milling around her feet. Ravenna appeared at last, soaring down the steps to join them. Nail stumbled after him. Kiss could both see and feel that Ravenna was wearing Nail. That was almost unheard of. The wraithbone pendant around Nail's neck was glowing. He held the Carthayan sabre in his hands. "Are we ready?" Ravenna asked.
"Nearly,"
Moloch replied. "Where are the others?" Kiss gestured beyond the monastic wall. Out on the landing, a lander's thrusters growled.
"They're boarding the lander. Sholto came."
"Good,"
said Ravenna. They all looked up as the bulk of Slight roared again. It was a deep, atonal blast, like the blaring warhorn of savage gods. The huge, snaking tentacles of the titanic abomination had begun to flop down over the sides of the Elmingard cliffs and reach around. Swelling black flesh bulged over the crushed palace. The smell was intolerable. Terraces crumpled and gave way under Slight's putrescent folds.
Harlan, I'm going to release you. Don't be a liability.
Nail's figure shivered and hunched slightly as Ravenna's mind let him go. His knuckles whitened around the hilt of Eviscerex, and he uttered a terrible, heartbreaking moan. "She's gone. I'm sorry, Harlan," Ravenna said. Nail didn't reply. He was shaking. There was nothing we could have done. Nail nodded slowly, as if he understood, but Kiss could see nothing left in him of the strong, vital man she knew.
"I'm done,"
said Moloch, turning to face them and flicking a cockroach off his sleeve.
Except for the blood, of course.
The bowl of Kalzean's blood had long since been lost in the mayhem. Harlan Nail, without hesitation, raised a Viscerex. He slid his left hand along its length. Blood ran from his sliced palm.
"Use this,"
he told Moloch. They stood and waited while Moloch anointed the door with Nail's blood. The red smudges immediately began to dilute in the rain.
"Key, young lady,"
Moloch said to Ayasob. Pouting reluctantly, she handed it to Moloch, and he fitted it into the lock.
"Now we should leave, if we're ever going to leave," said Moloch.
They headed out through the wall arch, onto the landing. Sholto's craft sat waiting for them, its engines throbbing impatiently. Kiss could see Unworth's concerned face in the glow of the instrumentation, watching for them through the cockpit window. Kiss, Ayasob, and Nail clambered aboard. "Is there not some incantation?" Ravenna asked as he and Moloch stood beside the waiting craft.
"Incantation,"
Moloch laughed. "I don't, I'm happy to say, know much about these things. I assumed there would be some words to speak, some ritual." Moloch giggled.
"What a strange notion your kind has of mine, Gideon. You picture us all, sheltered away on our covens, mumbling arcane phrases from decrepit tomes for the adulation of our masters."
"I'm sorry," said Ravenna. "I assumed—"
"Actually, there is,"
said Moloch, holding out a shred of parchment.
"And I want you to say it."
Chapter 16. Ravenna spoke the words, reading them from the paper Moloch held out in front of him. The blasphemy of them choked him and polluted him. Every word was a taste of venom. He allowed Moloch this moment of triumph.
"That wasn't so hard now, was it?"
Moloch asked.
"It was the hardest thing I've ever done," Ravenna replied, truthfully. "You are an irredeemable bastard, Moloch. I think I might leave you here."
"That would just be unsporting," said Moloch.
"It simply delays the inevitable."
"Then let's delay it. Who knows? There may not be an inevitable anything."
They boarded and closed the hatch.
"Master Unworth," Ravenna called.
"If you please." The lander lifted, jets straining into the night. Wind shear punished them and threatened to dash them off into the cliff or the surrounding mountains. Unworth cursed, fighting the stick. Kiss moved into the cockpit and used her telekinetic strength to help him lever back the controls. They rose into the storm, ailing and wrenching. Behind them, Elmingard had gone. Occupying its clifftop site like a nest, the vast, rugose mass of black flesh and flailing pseudopods roared and quivered.
"Now!"
Moloch yelled over the wail of the struggling thrusters.
"It has to be now!"
"We're still too close," Ravenna replied.
"Better too close than too late," said Moloch.
Ravenna lashed out with his mind. He reached back down into the filthy hell pit, his mind blistering and curdling as it was forced to extend into the warping maelstrom. It was like dipping his arm into a boiling cauldron to reach something at the bottom. He yelled out in pain. He saw the door. The pustular folds of Slight's distending form had almost crushed it. The old monastic wall had toppled, pushed out by the demon's stinking girth. Ravenna lunged for the door, for the key in the lock. It was white hot. He screamed again. It wouldn't turn. The lander jolted violently as a flailing tentacle struck it. They dipped and almost inverted. Dozens of alarm warnings began to shrill. Unworth cried out with rage as he fought to right them again. He brought them true, the thrusters maxing out at the limit of their power. Ice caked the front ports. Blowflies hatched from nowhere in their thousands and buzzed around the compartment. Ayasob shrieked. Every metallic surface and object in the lander blackened and tarnished. The wounds Plighton and Nail had taken suddenly began to bleed again. Belknap tried to staunch them. Kara's nostrils spurted blood, and she fell back in her seat.
"Damn it, and we were so close,"
Moloch said, flapping the flies away from his face.
"The Emperor protects," said Ravenna.
He took hold of the key.
He turned it. The door opened. The door opened into a bright, cold, white void that was somehow more hideous and terrible than the blackness and the demon and the storm.
The light poured out, alien and sterile. The marks Moloch had painstakingly inscribed around the doorway lit up like phosphorescent flares, burning down into the stone despite the rain. Straight lines of dazzling white power linked them together like las beams, shooting from one to another until a geometric web of frosty light surrounded the open door. the old wooden door caught fire. Its frame combusted and burned. As it came apart in flames, the awful white light on the other side escaped, fracturing beyond the destroyed doorway and then out past the geometric web itself. A jagged white gash tore across the ground and up through the wall. It spread and split, faster and wider and longer. A vast fissure of cold white light opened across the black rock of Elmingard. There was a second of silence, followed by a nuclear blink and a false dawn brighter than the sun. The Kell Mountains ceased to be. They were sucked back into nothingness as the warp engulfed them and dragged them in. The gigantic storm was swallowed up along with them, like ink in water, spinning down a drain. The night side of Gudrun lit up as clear as day. A shockwave front 2 kilometers deep slammed out from the event across the countryside as Saar. It caught the tiny craft struggling to escape its wrath and hurled it, tumbling from the sky. After, Thracian Primaris. 405.M41. I sit in the shadows of the cloister outside the hearing rooms. They will call me again soon for the next round of questioning. I have lost count of the days now. 31? 32? My pardoner will know. The court appointed him to me. His name is Kulich, an aspiring interrogator. He is reasonably efficient. As I go over the details with him in our briefings, his eyes widen as if I am telling him tall stories. He marks my comments down on his data slate and wonders how he is going to recount them in open court without ridicule. I wish him good luck. My Lord Rawkin still refuses to talk to me. I can understand his anger, although I had hoped he would affirm my actions without recourse to a formal hearing. His advisers privately assure me this is just for show, and that Lord Rawkin is obliged to follow correct process. I am not so sure. So, I sit in the chilly cloisters of the Palace of the Inquisition day after day. I have become used to its menacing, shadowy halls and unforgiving black marble floors. Inquisitorial guardsmen in burgundy armor, carrying their double-handed power blades upright before them, stalk past from time to time, escorting solemn men and women in grim robes. They pretend not to look at me. They know who I am. The rogue, the radical who saved Eustace Majoris by crippling it, and who spared Gudrun by wasting an entire province. Rogue. 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 I sit and wait for the next session to begin. My elders and betters will determine my fate. I trust they will make a good decision. Footsteps approach. I assume it's Kulich, but then I recognize the limp and the clack of the walking stick. Hello, says Maud, sitting down on the stone bench beside me. She leans her stick against the armrest. She is young and strong and still healing. Her arm is in a sling. There is a smile on her face.
How are we today?
She asks, breezily. Fine. Did you find it? She nods. She has papers in her hand.
At last. Took me ages. The archives are immense, and I was going back a long way. The prefects thought I was mad to be searching for something so distant and insignificant.
But you found it.
Of course I did. Say what you like about the Munitorum, but they keep the most thorough records. Besides, I'm a detective. What was that? Was that a laugh?
Yes.
All right, then. Sometimes your voice box makes damn funny sounds.
I laughed, Maud. It's good to have her with me. I appreciate her loyalty. Most of my friends are gone now. Some forever. Nails said his goodbyes to me 2 weeks ago. He was bound for Carthy, intending to return Eviscerex to the clan. He was brooding and quiet. I doubt he will ever return. Zale and Frauke left last week in the care of Inquisitor Lilith. She took Iasob with her, too. They will all be tested and processed. I think Lilith will be compassionate, but I entertain no real hopes of seeing any of them again. Kara, my dear Kara, remains under arrest. They are keeping her here somewhere. Her hearing will follow mine, and I hope by the Emperor's grace I will be there to testify for her. She doesn't deserve this. Belknap took passage to Eustace Majoris while we were still on Gudrun, the day before I turned myself over to Lilith. There was nothing to be said. He was a noble man, but his heart was broken by the strength of his faith. As for Unworth and Priest, I have had no word from either of them. I wish them well in whatever voyages they undertake. And Kiss. Kiss haunts the dining houses of the Hive, loitering quietly, waiting for me to be exonerated. I have no idea what she will do if the Inquisition demands my incarceration or death. I wish she would come and see me. So do you want to hear this or not? Plighton asks. After all the bloody effort I went to. Tell me, please. She shuffles the papers. Rajes, Phantomime Sub, 404.M40. Go on. Listening station, Arethusa. Service personnel, service records for Bashasvili, Ludmilla, it lists her as deceased that year. Was there a raid? No. No actions reported until 4:05. The records suggest she was...
executed, I finish.
For treason, I think.
The Kukud bristles and whispers. Ayasob has opened the door. Will you come with us? I ask.
Bashasvili shivers. Oh, no, Gideon. I don't think so. The far future frightens me. I think I'll be safer here.
I owe you everything. If this works, the far future you're so unsure of will owe you a great debt, too.
Go and do what you have to do, Gideon. It sounds important.
Goodbye, Ludmilla. I hear footsteps. It is Coolidge.
Sir, the hearings are about to recommence. Are you ready?
Yes, young man. He walks towards the heavy doors and waits for me to join him. A session bell is ringing. I'm coming, I tell him. Thank you for your work, Maud. I needed to know. Plighton rises, leaning on her stick.
I'll wait here until you get out, she says.
Then, Sati Province, Gudrun, 404.M41. The lander was a broken, buckled mass of wreckage. It had impacted in a bare field, 18 kilometers away from the epicenter, cutting itself a 60-meter-long gouge in the earth before coming to rest. Steam and smoke rose from the crumpled shape. Right until the last moment, Unworth had fought to bring them in safely. His skills had prevented them from simply crashing into the ground. Even so, it had not been a comfortable touchdown. Most of the passengers were unconscious. Vapor hissed, and lubricant dripped from torn hoses. Moloch clambered out onto the dry straw of the field. The crash had broken several of his ribs, and they ground together as he moved.
Oh, he said. Oh, shit. That hurts.
He began to stagger away across the parched fields. The sky was a threaded gray of pre-dawn. To the north, where the Kells had once stood, an immense pall of black smoke hung like a shadow. Ravener caught up with him several fields away, near a small wood. The trees in the wood had been stripped of their leaves by the aftershock. Moloch had come to a halt, leaning against the bars of a broken gate. He was breathing hard and clutching his ribs. His face was drawn and bloodless. He looked up as Ravener glided towards him, and laughed sadly. Laughing made him wince.
I can't run any more,
he said, pain coloring his voice. That's good. I'm tired of chasing you. Moloch nodded.
This is the inevitable bit we were talking about, isn't it?
It is, said Ravener, and reached out into Moloch's mind. Sigmund Moloch did not even put up a fight. When the others caught up with them, Moloch was lying on the ground beside the gate. Ravener felt Kiss approaching, with Kara close behind her. Behind them, a little further off, Nail was limping across the stubbled field. They drew close and halted, staring at the corpse beside the gate. In death, Moloch seemed a pathetic and insignificant thing, not at all the sort of being that should have required decades of devotion, sacrifice, and effort to bring down.
I told you, closure was overrated.
Kara nodded.
It's still closure, she said.
That was Ravener Road, written by Dan Abnett, read by Toby Lockwood. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2018.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.